Is that a... You silly sod!
Welcome to NC Gum Bunnies. This is Will.
This is Andy.
And we have today with us the Brian White.
Ooh.
That troll's been going on for too long.
So how are you doing today, Brian?
I'm doing well, thanks.
That's good, that's good. We met down at Crucible with Brian. When we met with him, I'd actually talked to him ahead of time to try to set up an interview. Long story short, I did not realize how much goes into a convention that size. So I was running around scrambling and did not end up getting the interview. So now we are Skyping Brian in, as he has so graciously left.
Yeah, conventions, there's when you play in all the tournaments, there's very little time to do anything else but, you know, get some food and sleep, so...
Yeah, I didn't know that at the time.
Ah, it's fantastic.
Today we're going to be going through, we're going to be talking about the history of like how you got into the game and previous years, what you're planning on doing the future this year. We're going to talk a little bit about clean play because I watched you this week and it was pretty awesome. We're going to talk a little bit about the whole Flanzer thing. You know what thing I'm talking about, the best player in the world thing.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And we're going to talk about your community here. Let's jump on into it.
All right, shoot.
All right. So, Andy, you got into War Machine when?
2010, sort of. I bought a battle box in like 2008, but I didn't really play it until 2010.
And I got into it when Hordes came out with my roommate. I bought Legion, he bought Scorn. How about you, Brian? Where did you get into the game?
I actually started playing during the Hordes Mark II field test. I remember printing out those PDFs when they first, you know, were out and you know, messing around with that. I started with Legion back then. My first models were actually bought from prize support from a 40K tournament. Yeah, so you used to be one of those guys.
So you got into wargaming through 40K? Any gateway drug before that got you into 40K?
Not really. I was first introduced to board gaming or wargaming through a friend of mine way back in middle school. This was like Rogue Trigger and second edition days. Played a bunch just locally at our houses then. And then, you know, once middle school and high school were finished, I put it down for a while when I went to college and then moved up to Atlanta for a job and, you know, didn't know anybody here and was looking, you know, to try and, you know, meet some people and ended up, you know, just getting back into the gaming hobby just to, you know, have some more social interactions and all. And that's when I started back with 40K and eventually transitioned into War Machine, which is just, you know, a better game all around, in my opinion.
That sounds oddly familiar.
Yeah, I've been sticking with that ever since.
Sounds good. So, did you stay in Legion long?
Yeah, I mean, I played pretty much them exclusively for about 9 months to a year or so before I wanted to, you know, get some exposure to the War Machine side of it as opposed to just Hordes, and picked up Protectorate, really enjoyed them, was playing, you know, the two factions kind of back and forth. Then I just started playing Protectorate some at conventions and then, you know, the whole WTC thing where I wanted to just practice only what I was going to be playing there. So for the last year and a half, I've been playing Protectorate almost exclusively. And then recently I've been playing some Cricks, which I've had for a while, but never really, you know, played with. Been enjoying them some, so I'm not sure what I'm going to stick with, but, you know, right now I'm playing some Cricks and enjoying it.
All right. So, you were playing since Mark II playtest. So, when did you really start getting competitive into the game?
Our gaming group has always been, we've got several local stores. One that I play at mostly. We've always been pretty competitive when it comes to gaming. So, we had a competitive mindset almost as soon as we started playing. In terms of actual skill, it took a little while to get there. Because, you know, you're learning the game with other people who are learning the game at the same time, so you have ideas of things that'll work, but then once you get exposure to larger metas, you realize, you know, that you've only scratched the surface. So, how long it took us to actually get there, I don't know offhand, but we tried to get competitive almost as soon as we started playing.
Okay.
How big is the community down there in Atlanta?
It's kind of weird down here. So we have three game stores, and the game stores have probably between 10 to 15 players each. But outside of a small group of people, there's very little bleed over. Most people just play at their one local store and don't travel to the other ones, which, you know, something that in the past we've tried to get people to travel through to the other local stores because they're not that far apart, maybe 30 minutes or so. But outside of a random tournament, there's very little actual mingling of the groups.
Yeah.
But overall, I would say probably around 40 or so distinct players.
No, that's still that's a nice size. That sounds very similar to our problems up here.
Yeah, because we have two distinct stores that have players that don't mesh, and then we actually have a whole bunch of stores we go to, but the most people who go to the stores that aren't those specific two are like a roving band of people. And we have the roving band, and then we have people who play at either of those stores, and that's about it.
Yeah, I don't know what it takes to get people to travel to other stores. I don't know, maybe there's just a bunch of different mindsets for why people play. You know, some people just only go there just to, you know, ease stress of work days or something like that, so really aren't that interested in, you know, multiple days and traveling to different stores and all. Maybe, you know, they don't have time for work to travel to the other different game days. Yeah, it's a bunch of different reasons. But.
So when do you feel you had your first big accomplishment on a national scene in War Machine?
My first convention was War Machine Weekend 2010. I've been playing for about 7 months or so, 6-7 months. I did okay there. You know, nothing special. I got like second, third place in like, you know, some of the late night tournaments, but didn't really much of an impact in any of the bigger ones. The first convention where I really had big success was probably Gen Con, was a year and a half ago or so, where I ended up taking both the hardcore and the masters and was part of the winning team tournament there. So I think that's where, yeah, I first had, you know, big impact in the tournament scene.
You went on to War Machine Weekend, and you nearly won War Machine Weekend, didn't you?
Well, I've qualified for the Invitational the last 3 years in a row, but I haven't made it very far. I made it to the second round this year before losing to Flanzer.
Okay.
One of the best players in the world.
if not the best player in the world.
Let's turn it around on him.
My biggest success at War Machine Weekend is I've three-peated the 75-point two-caster event.
Mm.
But those events are a lot of fun. Two casters on the same field. It throws all game balance out. It can get pretty ridiculous, but it's a lot of fun.
Sounds like it. So how did it feel to go to the WTC?
It was great. It was really a lot of fun. The best part of it, though, I have to say, is just the other players that you go with. You know, they're all really awesome people to hang out with. You know, to play games with, they're great. But away from the table, they're even better people than they are players, if you know that's possible, because they're great at the game as well. But they're super fun to hang out with, really nice guys, and you know, just the community feel of everybody, you know, representing the U.S. and, you know, having so much national pride to go out there and represent well with the Europeans. It was just so much fun. It was a blast.
What did you think of the format over there?
Well, none of us really had any experience with it before, and we were a little surprised when we first started practicing it how much of a game goes into it before you actually get to the table. You can really bring some lists that have weaknesses to even like common power lists, and then just try and match up your way around it. It took us a little bit of time to just try and figure out exactly how we can do the matchups and realized also that you're not trying to sweep your opponent. You only need to get 3 victories to move on. It was different. I know there were some people who thought it was, you know, added an additional element to the game that was good. Others who kind of felt that it was taking away from it. I'm a little ambivalent. I feel a little bit of both. I thought it was an interesting dynamic, but I'm not sure that distinctly better than just ranking your players 1 to 5 and then, you know, your ones meet their ones and so on, like normal team tournaments are.
Okay. Do you have any particular people out there that you thought were really awesome?
In terms of the U.S. or Europeans? Or
Europeans.
We know about
the Europeans. And we'll talk about some U.S. people. We'll talk about them later.
So I'm really awful with names. So that's just something that I just can't, I don't know what it is, I just can't keep track of names. But the Germans were actually pretty cool. We had heard a lot of trash talking going on from the Germans to the U.S. teams. It might have been, and it probably was, similar to what happened with us. There were a lot of just random people on the forums who were posting, oh yeah, U.S. is going to kick ass, U.S. is going to sweep this and all. Some of the posters were a little bit aggressive in their support for the U.S., which is cool. We loved, you know, being supported by the general, you know, public, you know, the War Machine community. But it was rubbing a couple of people the wrong way. You know, in terms of the Europeans, they felt like, you know, who are these guys who haven't come and played in our tournament who think that they're just going to come and win? We had heard, like, similar levels, if not greater, of trash talk coming from the Germans. But I feel that it was just, you know, random people, not necessarily them. Because when we met them, they were great people to hang out with and talk with. One of them got a little intoxicated and came into our room like in the middle of the night, came into her room, just sat down and just started talking nonstop. You know, trash talk, being really nice and all. He was a really cool guy.
Sounds like an experience.
Oh, yeah. It was also a little bit of a wake up call to realize how much of a party it is. Like, we didn't know what to expect when we first got there. Everybody there was just super interested in meeting up people from other countries, hanging out, sharing their favorite alcohol. It was a giant party from the get-go. We really had to, you know, watch ourselves not get too intoxicated. Something I could have done better at the Crucible.
What did y'all bring? Did y'all bring any alcohol there?
We didn't, because we didn't know that that was... I don't know whether there's any kind of issues going through customs with alcohol and all that. So we just didn't know that it was a practice, so we didn't have anything with us.
So next year then.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So how was your team there? Your fellow American, or both teams then?
They're really cool people to hang out with, as I said, both at the table and away. We were a pretty tight group there. We hung out together a lot. At practice weekend, you know, we spent a couple of days in Brussels before the event, recuperating from jet lag, which is totally a thing. Mm-hmm. And then just traveling around Europe some for a couple of days, just, you know, most of us, some had to go back early for work, but it was a lot of fun just hanging out with the people, you know, talking, getting to know them better, and, you know, getting drunk with them. And it was a good time. And of course, they're all really good players. And so it was an honor to be chosen to represent the U.S. among them.
So was it over there like just a minefield of like sharks, everybody from their best metas when you were playing?
Not necessarily. I mean, there were some teams who were there, I think, more for the experience, you know, that didn't have as developed a meta. You know, they wanted to go, they wanted to play, get exposure to, you know, some of like the stronger players out there, and they were just there having a good time. Well, certainly there were a lot of teams that were just stacked with great players. You know, the Germans, the English, and, you know, the Polish had a very strong team as well, obviously, because they won. You know, there were many, many teams that were just filled with five very strong players, but then there were some who were not as strong, who were just, in my opinion, just looking to have a really great weekend playing War Machine and meeting, you know, people that they wouldn't normally get to meet.
Sounds great. I know there's no official word yet, but you're hopeful this year?
I am hopeful. I'm not sure when it's going to be announced, but yeah, I'm definitely hoping to go back.
Awesome, awesome. We'll move on to talking about the future of Brian White. Well, first we're going to do some recent past. TempleCon and Crucible.
All right. Yeah, TempleCon was the first convention this year that I brought Crix to. I've been playing them some. I didn't get a whole lot of time to practice with them. You know, maybe a month or so that I've been playing Crix, you know, a couple of games a week. I've been having a whole lot of fun with Asphyxius 1. That guy is fantastic.
I'm with
he's
you.
Not as good as Asphyxius 2. Well, you know, that's fair, but he's just so much more fun for me to play. And so that guy's kind of been, you know, my primary caster of the faction. They had Bane Riders over at TempleCon, so I picked them up, and I've been playing a list with him with three full units of Cav. You know, max Bane Riders, max Soul Hunters with Duragrath around, max Steelhead Cav with some Halberdiers for flank, and then, you know, some Blood Witches for the anti-tough aura and Entropic Force and, you know, the Dispel Dagger in case, you know, one of them get hit by Fear of God or Crippling Grasp or something. That list is very fast, very, very hard-hitting, and just a lot of fun to play. And Asphyxius 1 just has a lot of options when he's out at the table.
I wish I'd watched one of those games. That sounds like an interesting list.
Yeah, well, at Crucible, unfortunately, you know, Bane Riders weren't allowed yet because, you know, they haven't been generally released, and the pre-release is available there. So, you know, make the field fair. Bane Riders weren't allowed, so I didn't get to play them at Crucible. It's a lot of fun to play. I've been very comfortable with him as my first list in the Steamroller pair. The second one has been kind of washing back and forth. At TempleCon, it was Denegra 2, who's a very strong caster. But I just feel that she's pretty one-dimensional in terms of she wants to come forward, feed you out of the scenario, kill anything that tries to contest and win that way, which is a strong plan. But some of the scenarios, it's not really possible. And I don't know, I just wasn't really enjoying her the way I was in Asphyxius 2, so I've been kind of like washing back and forth on who to play. My third list for Masters events is Asphyxius 2, because that guy just answers so many questions. Mm-hmm. So I don't like him really that much in a two-list environment. I just don't enjoy playing him that much, but he's so strong in a three-list environment that you just kind of are obligated to take them almost in cricks.
So in that three-list pairing, who is your Legion drop? I'm sorry, I'm a Legion player, so listening to those three lists, it actually sounds like I have strong plays against all three of them. Who would you play against that?
It really depends on the Legion lists and whether any have already been dropped. You know, it might make the person hesitant to drop that caster.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, I'm actually pretty happy with Asphyxius 1 against Legion.
Okay, even Cav heavy?
Yeah, the Cav Heavy Legion list. It's very fast. It threatens charges just as far as Legion Beasts. You know, they threaten, you know, 13, 14 inches. You know, high-powered shots can certainly drop a Cav or two, but, you know, Deathstalkers aren't going to do much to the Cav. You know, they'll take out some Blood Witches or Steelhead Halberdiers, but they don't do all that much. Seraph's Beat certainly is a problem. Duragrat's minus two aura can help out quite a bit in terms of just staying power on the Cav. And everything hits so hard. Asphyxius himself can do a lot of work. He can certainly kill a Legion Heavy and teleport away.
Yeah, very true.
Very true. With the Asphyxius 1 and liking that playstyle, what playstyle do you generally gravitate towards with your caster selection? And does it change based on the faction that you're playing, or do you just generally have a style that you like?
I personally don't like playing gunlines. Just never been a fan of it in any game system. I like melee-style lists. I think that the best War Machine lists will have a little bit of diversity in it, and I think that War Machine lists do best when they're built for attrition, but have a threat of assassination. I think that the safest way to win a game is through attrition. But if you don't threaten at least any kind of assassination or reach out and touching people, then your opponent will do everything that he wants to do on his turn. I think having an assassination threat forces your opponent's caster to play safer and not, you know, contribute as much as they normally would. So I think that a melee-style list that threatens an assassination, like Asphyxius 1, you know, if you're not immune to spells, he's got that threat of an Arcanum runs up there, and then he auto-hits you with four Breath of Corruptions, or if your defense is really low, you know, Hellfires or something like that. You know, so he threatens an assassination while having a heavy melee attrition with so much hard-hitting power. So those are the style lists that I prefer to play.
Okay. So that just gravitates to a caster or a list is based on attrition but can threaten their caster.
That's the ideal way that I like to play. Like, going back to Protector, my Harbinger list was a very heavy attrition skew. It had no assassination potential really whatsoever unless the opponent was careless, because I only had, you know, melee threats. So my Harbinger list is not that same format. It is purely melee. I could not force my opponents to you know, be cautious with their casters outside of just, you know, they just couldn't be careless. It just had such a strong attrition that the goal behind the list was, yeah, let my opponent do what they want to do, but just overpower them anyway through attrition. So it's a little different than, you know, the Crick style, which constantly threatens to kill your caster if you're not careful. But it still was that same, just, you know, grind down your opponent style list.
I'm a huge fan of that Harbinger skew, especially the tier list with Crusaders.
The tier list is a little bit different than the infantry.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant, as in melee skews with Harbinger.
There's nothing more frustrating to your opponent than having Vilmon and one or two paladins and impervious wall just marching up the board, engaging important things when they don't have more than like one or two magic weapons to kill them with, and you larder, and they're just it can be quite amusing.
It's fantastic.
Looking dreamy over here, remembering when he has played Harbinger. So Harbinger is your main the main caster you like, a protector.
Yeah. Although, now that I've played Crix and played against her several times, man, that caster is bullshit.
I'm with you.
I agree. I think she's either the most powerful or the second most powerful caster in the game.
This is coming from a faction
based
that...
on bullshit. It's a lot of bullshit.
This is the faction that has access to Gatsby 2, too, and you're saying that.
I mean...
That feat, on top of everything else, is super powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Feet, awe, martyrdom. Ugh.
I got her in Who's the Boss at Crucible, and it was great.
We'll move on to your transition from Menoth to Crix. So you transitioned just because you wanted to play out some Crix this year?
Yeah, I mean, I played Protectorate for the last year and a half or so straight. I was just looking for, you know, a change of pace. And I've had a Crix army for quite a while. Just hadn't really played them a whole bunch outside of some local games. I was just looking for something different and tried out Crix. You know, really fell in love with Asphyxius 1, and then, you know, just decided to stick with him for a while, try him out at a couple of conventions. Whether I stay with them in the coming year or not will vary. As I mentioned earlier, I'm hoping to get back on the WTC team, and, you know, with that format, with no duplicate casters, I'd really leave it up to the team to see whether they wanted me to stick with Crix and which casters they'd want me to play, or whether they'd want me to go back to Protectorate and you know, kind of practice from there.
Okay. Yeah, I watched a lot of your Asphyxius 1 play over the weekend because I wanted to see the list in action. When I saw the Cav, I love Cav with any buffs you can apply to him, and all that Cav is just so fast.
Yeah, definitely. If that list goes first, it really puts a lot of pressure on the opponent very quickly.
Yeah, they're great models to get buffs through, and they can deal with some of the anti-infantry stuff that other factions bring.
Yeah, I feel like it's a solid answer to what people use to fight Crix with.
Especially if Duragrath is pretty far forward, providing his Beyond Death Aura, it shrugs off a lot of Pow-Tent shooting.
How far forward do you play, Dara? I watched a little bit, but to knock off Pow-Tent shooting so you get him in the bubble?
He can move 8 inches forward, do his Beyond Death, and then Light Cav 5. So he's moving 13 with his 9-inch aura of living models have -2 to damage rolls across the board. It's not strength or anything like that. It's just straight up damage rolls, which is a little silly. He's a Dragoon, so if it...
All right, Brian. I think I got it back working.
All right, cool.
Awesome.
Hooray.
All right. So we were talking about Dara getting up there, and I guess I didn't think about the cavalry being up there, too. Everything's in the list is incredibly fast.
Yeah, definitely. You know, speed 7 is about the minimum there. I mean, the halberdiers are 6, but they're mostly to run and provide flank for the steelhead cav. Then everything else is pretty much 7 or more.
Something for Signar to shoot at so they feel good about themselves.
But yeah, if the opponent has quite a bit of, like, you know, range contents, Duragrath will, you know, he'll be moving his 8 inches forward with his regular speed, put his Beyond Death Aura on the Light Cav an additional 5, and, you know, he might be pushing as far ahead as possible, to even a little bit ahead of the Cav some. Especially if I get first turn and just run on the first turn. And then, you know, it's -2 to damage rolls from living models. So anybody, you know, the strike force with Pow-10s, gun mages with Pow-10s, now shooting at Pow-8s. And even on Soul Hunters, it's dice -7. On Bane Riders, that's dice -10. It's really not going to do a whole lot.
Mm-mm. It seems like it would even take a Stormwall, maybe a full activation just to kill a Cav, which at that point is not really in your favor.
I mean, you figure he's gonna have to boost 2 gunshots. Like, I mean, it's not bad. Like, wasting a Stormwall activation to shoot up some Cav is not the greatest.
No, I like it a lot.
Those Cav, unless it's Haley 1, she's a real problem. those Cav will kill the Stormwall. I Parasite Stormwall, I Siding Touch, the Bane Riders, they're swinging at effective Pow 20s.
Oh, man,
and,
cruel.
You know, it's dice -6 on the covering fire, so they're charging through that. Soul Hunters, they'll charge right through the covering fire, being incorporeal at the time. They won't be swinging as hard, but, you know, they're still quite effective.
Yeah, those guys love having buffs on them.
Mm-hmm. And the Steelhead Cav will shatter anything that they touch if they can get flank. they can be effective Pow 18 Weapon Masters with a Pow 16 boosted backswing.
Fantastic. Yeah, I know, because those Steelhead Cav just destroy anything as long as you get flank.
Yeah, and one of the games at the Crucible Masters, I put 2 of them on Tiberian and killed him.
Ooh.
I put Parasite on Tiberian, I had Siding Touch on the... The Steelhead Cav, I charged with, I think, 2 Steelhead Halberdiers, so they did a CMA, and then 2 Cav came in and killed him from full.
Oh, that sounds downright effective, yeah.
That sounds very effective.
Me and Tiberian have a long and sordid past.
Let's move on to talking about meta and the where the game is going this year. From what it seems like, there's a lot of weird stuff going on right now. I'm watching, we're following the Mayhem Cup right now as results are being posted. There have been a lot of interesting lists out there and a lot of people playing different things. So what do you think the game is shaping up this year?
Well, unfortunately, I love Will Pagani. He's a great guy, but he had that jackass. He won TempleCon with Retribution. I do not like Retribution. The Virus 2 was awesome. I love that guy he's playing against, but pretty much everything in that faction is a chore. As I said earlier, I don't like playing gun lines. I'm not a fan of playing against them either. Master Shake on the forums, on the Red forums, he's Matt Blaisdell. He's one of the Atlanta locals. He's a cool guy away from the table. But man, his retribution is so frustrating to fight against. That guy loves Raven, and so I grew up in War Machine playing against Nightfeet Go. And that has just left a bitter taste in my mouth towards Gunlines. And now with all the great releases that Retribution has gotten, and, you know, with Will winning TempleCon with them, it's going to be a great exposure. I imagine there's going to be quite a bit more Rhett in the future, which is not something I'm really looking forward to.
So we have a national meta defined by what Pagani wins with. 5 Kador at Crucible? Yeah.
Well, I'll look for anybody winning with Rhett to have that happen, especially with all the stuff they have coming out. Good gosh.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that thing has really added a lot to the faction. Assyria's a strong caster. She's helped answer some of the problems that they had. Virus 2, you know, from the previous book is really good. The Imperatus seems pretty crazy as well.
Having played against that several times now, it's awful. It's the worst thing ever. I put 2 angels and a Scythian onto him, and he survived.
Because he's colossal. It's cheaper.
God, he's tougher to kill than my colossal.
Yeah, especially because, you know, that, you know, people say, oh, 51 damage to kill him. It's kind of deceptive, because if you hit him down to, like, 3,
yeah,
and then, you know, you hit him for another 8, that's 5 damage that you've lost, you know, because it goes, you know, the 8 damage actually is only 3, and then he heals his, what, like 15 or something? 17?
I think it's yeah, 17. 17. It's awful. And the 13 defense is just the icing on the cake that makes it so much. I mean, half of your attacks miss on him.
Yeah, you're wasting fury, boosting the hit on your armor pierce from the angels, and just rapidly run out of steam.
Good gosh. Yeah, he's... I can't believe how hard to kill that thing is.
That's like, okay, he doesn't hit hard back that hard, right?
No, just 2-pound 19s. No, what are you gonna... With reach. And, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
If only he's Matt 7, that seems, you know.
It's
yeah.
Mecha Karn with a regenerating system.
Now let's put him with Virus 1, so he's armor 20. Even better.
That or, you know, Virus 2, give him some synergy, because
yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Synergy would give him a whole bunch of Griffins and Imperatus there.
Pow 25, 26. 28.
Yeah, Matt, not once.
Yeah.
No longer care.
Matt, it doesn't matter anymore. So, a lot more Rhett this year. You're not happy about that. There was a lot...
Yeah, no offense to any Rhett player, but I think you're bad people if you play that.
We'll tell that to our local Rhett player. He's officially a bad person.
Yeah, we'll tell that to PG, Chris. Yeah, that's fine. That's
yeah.
Fine. I have said some horrible, horrible things about Harbinger. Not people who play Harbinger. I understand, but...
The people who play Harbinger are also not good people.
Yeah, no.
Coming from one of them.
all bad people. Saren's just fine, though. Don't worry about it.
Whenever you say martyr, you know, you lose a little bit of your soul to the devil.
Yeah, no. she is a cruel caster.
There was a lot of Kador Crucible.
Yeah, there was.
5 in Masters.
Yeah.
And the final table.
Final table double Kador. Oh, gosh. Do you think they're going to end up getting a lot more play this year?
Quite possibly. I mean, Butcher 3 is a very strong caster who also seems like he's super fun to play. And any strong caster who is enjoyable to put down on the table is someone who will see a very large amount of table time. And that guy certainly seems like one of them. He's also, he's quite good. He's very skew in terms of, you know, his matchups and what can face him. You know, there's so much that don't threaten Butcher at all. He plays a game similar to Terminus, except I think he just does it a little bit better than Terminus does, where, yeah, the opponent might have one or two things that threaten Butcher, so the Butcher player's entire game plan is to kill those two things, and maybe Butcher himself, and then feed his camp back up, and then, you know, Butcher is immune and he'll just go crazy.
It's like all the previous Butcher plans with the Butcher as an in-game anchor, but now it's Butcher as a ranked murdering guy who's like, what can kill me? Oh, that, all right. Once that's dead, it's over for the rest of
him. Yeah. And, you know, then he's got his whole disposable army to try and kill it and, you know, jam anything else. And yeah, it's pretty interesting to play against him.
He answers problem matchups.
He also he's one of those guys who also threatens an assassination pretty much all the time. You know, you accidentally trigger a Kurbow move, you spray and catch a dog and roll high and kill it, you know, the game's over.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That means Assyria, Butcher 3. Is there anything else you see in Vengeance impacting this year's meta?
Resnik 2, I don't really expect to see much of. Just having a caster on a huge base is pretty big disadvantage. Like, there's so much more real estate. And that guy also seems like he wants to press forward on his feet. You know, he wants to move forward and catch as many models as he, enemy models as he can in his feet, and then, you know, have the army take advantage of that with the minus defense and the explosions and all. But with a huge base caster, it's really difficult to do because you can't move forward because your models will be in the way unless you leave a giant gap from the previous turn to move your caster forward first. At which point you then leave a giant gap that's, you know, a huge lane for your opponent to try and, you know, deliver a model to Resnik himself. So you kind of have that, you know, catch 22 of he wants to go first, but he can't because he's not going to be able to move forward. So you're going to have someone else, you know, whatever units in front of him go before him, which then don't take advantage of his feet. It seems like he's got issues that'll have to, you know, the protective player will have to work through that are just kind of a disadvantage. And you know, his stat line's not that great. Adept 13 is on a caster is pretty rough. He can certainly camp high, but I don't think he wants to be camping. He's also got a lot of upkeep, so any of the purification casters out there can give him a hard time. So I don't expect to see a whole lot of Resnik 2. Certainly some people play him, especially, you know, if his model is great, people will certainly be interested in playing him just to be able to put that model on the table. Gorshade 3, I've been playing him a little bit, proxying him up from the no quarter. He seems pretty good. I've got to get some more table time on him with him to see how, you know, strong he really is. That Siphon Bolt assassination is really legitimate against Horde. You just run up somebody and make the caster stationary, and then, you know, your transfers are actually a detriment at that point as he's using them to hit you more. It's a pretty good just threat to have in your back pocket, and then the real test of whether it'll be good or not is seeing how his attrition play is with Mockery of Life.
Yeah, because he can just churn out dudes every turn.
Yeah, if he's got a living enemy that he can catch, that casts a spell, he gets a 3-1, keeps occultation on himself, maybe to keep himself from ranged assassination, and he, you know, brings back 4 people a turn, that can be pretty serious. Although, you know, unlike Rio Revive, they have to sacrifice their action, which, you know, saves a lot of ridiculous Wild Thrall purges.
Thank goodness.
it does hurt his you know, non-Wild Thrall revives. Like, he can't bring back Banes and have them charge kind of thing, like, you know, the Testament can do with Exemplar Weapon Masters.
Are you playing him Cav heavy, or are you playing him in a more standard Crix list?
I certainly have a unit of Bane Riders with him, because I'm looking at him in a 3-list environment with a 6-1 and a 6-2. I want to try him out as my second in a Steamroller pair, and then, you know, a 6-2 is the third. So I've already got one Cav heavy skew. I think Bane Riders are pretty good with him because he's got Siding Touch, so you can make them hit pretty hard. They have their own built-in accuracy and threat range increase, so they don't need Tartarus around. It certainly is beneficial to have a curse outside of activation that the unit leader can also benefit from, because frequently what I'll have to do is the unit leader will charge something unimportant in order to get range on my real target to curse it, and then the rest of the unit is able to take advantage of the extra range. So having Tartarus around would certainly alleviate that a little bit, but in a through-list environment, Tartarus is already spoken for with Asphyxius 2. I'm actually, believe it or not, I'm trying out Revenant Pirates. Hmm. They're pretty ridiculous in terms of just being not good in general. But, you know, Siding Touch helps them hit a gang, makes them hit, you know, respectable. On the turns leading up to it, if they get occultation, it can be really difficult to remove that unit leader. So you might be able to kill off the front part of the unit, but if you can't catch that occultated unit leader in the back, then they all just automatically come back. It seems like, you know, that will help his recursion skew quite a bit. I don't know whether it'll actually make the cut. We'll have to see whether the occultation will actually make them worthwhile or not, but I'm giving them a try. That Rankgrave himself is just a quality 2-point solo.
Yeah.
That guy's good.
I actually have been hearing rumblings about the pirates with him, the Revenant crew, so I can definitely believe it. And you have the 3 little rifle guys, too. I mean, you can stationary people and then shoot them up, too.
Yeah, definitely. And then Rankgrave's gun is a magical ghost shot hand cannon that will add a that Revenant crew. So it's also got a magical weapon too, this Bow 13 for some reason. Causer with Sac Pawn to these Revenant guys. I mean, where did this guy even come from? He's a 13.
It's because he's a Crix solo. That's why.
Yeah, really.
He doesn't have the word Bane in front of him.
So, gotta be crazy?
It's gotta be. I mean, how does he compete? Got to compete. Do you have any opinions on Striker 3?
I think Striker 3 is good, but I think Striker 2 is better.
I agree with that.
I think they play similar games, and I just think that the deflection, you know, delivering his army is better than nothing that Striker 3 does to help survivability on the way in. And Rebuke is one of the best spells in the game.
Mm-hmm.
That spell is really strong. No orders, no charges or anything like that for units that you can't, you know, you can't purify. It's not an upkeep. You can cast it multiple times. Striker to himself, you know, will kill you if you make a mistake. You know, just if he's feeling threatened in terms of the attrition, that guy can come in from a very long distance away and kill and cut your fool head off.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, he sure can. He definitely can. Definitely can.
And has.
Yeah. We deal with a lot of Striker 2 down here.
Our Signar player.
He plays Striker 2 a lot.
He doesn't want to play Haley 2 for some reason, so we have to deal with Siege and Striker all the time.
For things we know a little bit less about, what are your feelings on Sublix coming out this year?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't really seen anything definitive about how they're going to play, you know, what their rules are, so it's tough to comment on it. It'll be, if the Sublix continue to work for Grix, it might give that new Denegra 2 tier list quite a boost.
Yeah, it could. It definitely could. Yeah, I don't know control casters and mercs, how that would change them. It also depends on how fast they actually release things this year, too. And we're getting a third book this year, which is just crazy. Your thoughts on that? We're actually getting the Hordes book this year.
Oh, we are?
Yeah.
I did not know.
Is this fall.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
the Warbeast packs? Really going to need to see how those things interact with, you know, bust of battle groups and Warbeasts and things like that. If they count as battle group Warbeasts. Veil 1 with Insight might make those things pretty crazy.
I'm so happy.
Anything that really just has a strong battle group buff, if it works that way.
And how their frenzying works. Strong. How their frenzying works, too, is going to be really important.
I'm excited.
Okay, so what... Your plans for the rest of this year? You got conventions you're planning on attending, things like that?
War Machine Weekend, for sure. That has been my favorite convention every year. It's been a lot of fun, you know, a lot of games, a lot of cool people. Carl is a great person. He organizes the convention very well, and, you know, everybody else that helps out, you know, they do a fantastic job. Definitely going to go back there yet again. I'd like to be going back to the WTC, and that's going to be a big one to determine how many others I can go to. Yeah, the WTC, you know, certainly want to spend some extra days around Europe. You know, it's fantastic to just go and you know, see the sights there. And that'll eat up some of my time off, so I need to plan accordingly from there. So I'm not sure how many extra conventions I'm going to get to go to. Probably, if I get into the WTC, just War Machine Weekend, probably just one other, which I haven't really decided which one it'll be yet.
Well, you wanted to talk a little bit about GigaCon?
Yeah, GigaCon is actually a local event that we're running here in Atlanta. It'll be a War Machine Weekend qualifier, and this will be the first year that it's multiple days. We've had a local qualifier here in Atlanta for the past 2 years. This year, David Kelly, our local press ganger, and Gigabytes Cafe, where it's being, you know, run out of, they're looking to make it a weekend-long event. It's actually going to be, from what I understand, a very similar format to the Crucible this year. They're going to have a evening event, you know, Friday. I believe Crucible's going to be a smaller point hardcore just for people who are in town already and looking for something to do. On Saturday, there'll be a pair of 50-point steamrollers. I believe they're actually one after the other. The top eight from each steamroller is going to qualify for the Masters on Sunday, which will be the War Machine Weekend qualifier. It's my understanding at this point that there'll be a 50-point steamroller initially, and then once it cuts down to the top eight who qualify for Masters, once the top eight is determined, it'll cut to just those top eight who will continue to play out the tournament, and everybody else will be dropped and have a chance to enter into the second one. The second 50-point steamroller, which will then qualify the next top eight. So I believe there's room for 64 players. So it should be a pretty good time, and looking forward to playing in it and trying to qualify for the War Machine Weekend Invitational. So it'll be a good time.
So they're gonna post up signups ahead of time.
There's a sign up now on the Gigabytes Cafe forums. I believe Corey Hockman, who you guys met at Crucible.
Yep.
His forum name is like My Last Nerve or something like that. He posted a link to it on the Muse site.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. It might have scrolled off the page. I'll see if I can, you know, bump it back up to the top. Yeah, he posted a link to it, and so there's signups right now going on.
All right. Well, you should see us down there. I think Liam and I are planning on going down again.
Y'all two are planning on going? Yeah. And I are planning on going.
All right. So
that'd be cool to see you guys again.
That's four of us.
So far, the same people from Crucible.
Hopefully this time, unlike Crucible, I don't pass out again from not listening. Thanks, Mike Pereira. That guy is great. Mike Pereira is awesome. He was one of my favorite guys, you know, to hang out with at the WTC. The guy is super fun.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't just that night.
Oh, I was so hungry.
That told me about Mike Pereira, because he is an awesome person. It was that morning where he is just beating himself up over the fact that you're like, I don't want to go out there.
Oh, yeah. It was awful. It was so bad. I just had nothing to eat for a really long time. And, you know, I wasn't very hydrated to begin with. And I don't drink hard liquor much. I mostly just drink beer and got a little too intoxicated there at the Crucible, and it was pretty bad. I woke up in on the floor in the bathroom, not knowing how I got there. Yeah, so then the next day, you know, on Sunday for Masters, I felt like I wanted to die. And I was actually gonna drop, but Mike was able to convince me to play, and it was a rough day. It was difficult.
Yeah, we saw you napping in between rounds.
Oh yeah. Covering my eyes from the light. It was one of those hangovers.
Ooh.
Ooh. That's no good. But yeah, we're looking forward to seeing you again when we go down there.
Cool.
We'll bring alcohol to improve our chances.
That's what I did when I hit cruise. I was like, I'm sticking to beer this weekend.
I went to bed at like 10:15.
Hopefully we can drag out Tyler.
Yeah, and I think Jeff said he might be willing to go down too. We'll see.
So you're working on your conventions, which ones you're going to go to. WTC will affect a lot of that. So let's talk about something you're known for, which is clean play. Playing a very crisp, tight game. So how did you develop this play style? Was it just something that came naturally to you? Was it something you worked hard at? What was it that makes it so your play style is the way it is?
I played a lot of games. I played against a lot of, you know, different opponents, and I think the thing that frustrates me the most, and it's very rare for it to actually happen, but the thing that frustrates me the most is when somebody is just careless with measurements. You know, they'll hold the tape measure pretty high, you know, their hand will slide as they're moving models, and they're constantly, you know, getting an extra half inch here and an extra inch there. That kind of measurements and kind of carelessness, whether it's intentional or not, kind of frustrating to play against, and when this happened a couple of times, it really was annoying. So I'm like, all right, you know, I certainly don't want to play that way. I don't want to, you know, give that negative experience to my opponents. I'm going to make sure that I measure carefully. I certainly shift models around a little bit here or there, but only while the unit is activating. I don't like to go back and, you know, fix things after the fact. You know, I like to just play as carefully as possible. If I make a mistake, try and learn from it and, you know, suffer the consequences so it sticks with you more. That said, you know, I don't necessarily try and hold my opponent to the same degree. If they want to take back, I'm okay with that. The game is about having fun, after all. You know, I try to have a good time with my opponent. You know, I'll remind them of rules, you know, beneficial or not to them. You know, just to make sure that the game plays the way that it's supposed to. Because I like to have a competitive game. I like to play my best and try and overcome, you know, my opponent's best. I don't like them to forget, you know, this rule here that would have helped them if they forget a rule that would have helped them in the game, you know, something that, you know, it's also mandatory. You know, you have to remind your opponent. You have to just play that kind of game. That's the way that I've tried to play games and hold myself to that standard, you know. And, you know, it's more fun that way. You have a better time with your opponent when, you know, no one is leaving the table with a bad taste in their mouth.
Agreed. Do you have any tips for improving people's games, for people improving their own game to make it more clean game?
Some tips, I guess, you know, if you make a mistake, you know, if you're really trying to have your game be cleaner, if you make a mistake, don't ask for a take back. The best way to learn is to get punished, you know, for a mistake. Like, you know, when you put your caster a little bit too far forward and you realize that he's in danger, if you lose the game, you're not going to do that again. If you just be like, oh, I'm sorry, can I, you know, after everything's over, you're like, oh, ooh, I'm sorry, can I do this and this? You know, you can easily get into that habit. You don't form a habit of very clean and precise movement. Just suffering consequences for mistakes is a good way to learn. But here's one that I found is just try and maintain a level head. Everyone goes on tilt. I've certainly gone on tilt in several games, and that's a big way to start playing sloppy and making mistakes. The more frustrated you are in a game, the less clear you'll be thinking. You know, you'll start just making silly mistakes. If you find yourself starting to get frustrated, it might be a good idea, even if it's on your own death clock or time turn, to just take a second, step back from the table, take a few deep breaths, you know, just center yourself again, and then continue playing. You'll find yourself making less mistakes the more calm you are at a game.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you.
We also hear you're the best player in the world from Jason Blanton.
He's being flattering. That's not true. I'm honest with myself enough to know that I'm not the best player in the world.
In theory, you're one of the top 10.
I certainly hope that I am, and, you know, that I can certainly qualify for the WTC, but best in the world? Nah.
Who do you think some of the best players in the world are that you've seen?
Well, shout out to Mike Currier. Jason Flanzer is definitely one of the best. That guy comes up with moves that people don't see coming. He's very good at building deceptive lists that, you know, people don't immediately recognize the point of, and he's able to play it quite well. That guy is a very solid player. It's also really hard to argue with Will Pagani's success recently. The guy's won multiple conventions with multiple different factions, which takes a very high level of skill to do. There are a lot of fantastic players out there. You know, some are very well known, like Keith Christensen and Jake Van Meter and all that. And then there are other players out there who you just haven't been to enough conventions and, you know, mostly just play local, that are really solid players that no one even really knows about yet. I mean, you can't say definitively who the best player in the world is, because, you know, there's no way to really rank it. So I guess that's the politically correct answer. There's no way to know. If you had to play the devil for your soul, you had to bet on somebody, I certainly would be betting on either Flanzer or Pagani.
I don't think that's a bad call.
Not at all.
I definitely don't think that's a bad call at all. We're a community-based show. We like talking about people's communities. We like talking about our community, and we like hearing about the other people's communities. So what's your community like down there in Georgia?
By and large, it's a very good bunch of people. It's a little weird, though, you know, or maybe it's not, from what you guys are saying. It's pretty segmented. So there's a couple of different stores that mostly stick to themselves. There's a very large skill gap, I guess, or level of skill. I mean, we have a lot of new players who are just kind of like getting into the game and learning the game. And then, you know, then we have a solid number of good players who haven't quite bridged that gap into being serious tournament competitors at, you know, like convention levels. And then we certainly have, you know, several people here locally that are a threat in any tournament that they enter. So you can get a lot of different levels of competition here in Atlanta, which is pretty good. You know, we certainly have seen recently a large improvement from several of the players here, which is always good to see. It's always great to have more competitive games. It's never fun to play newer players and just, you know, win all your games because they're new. You know, you don't want that. You want to have the meta improve as a whole, and you just have more competition, because competition is ultimately what will improve your game. You know, you don't want to just win. You want to have challenging games.
Yeah, I've always had a great time with the Atlanta guys who come up to Mace every year. Well, actually, last year was that the first year they came up?
I do not know.
Well, we definitely had a contingent of Atlanta guys come up with Corey and then everyone else whose names I've forgotten because their forum handles aren't their names.
Yeah, Corey's a really cool guy. That guy is fun to hang out with away from the table as well, just like most of the guys. But that guy especially, him and John Galvin are two of my favorite people in Atlanta.
Yeah, he was drafted as an honorary gun bunny on the on the Crucible, when they signed everyone up based on their metas, they put him with us instead of you guys for some reason.
Yeah, I saw that MC next to his name. Pretty funny.
Yeah.
So, sweet people down there in your community. Are there people you wanna talk about any that people may not know about?
Fuck them. seriously, yeah. No, John Galvin and Corey Hoffman are really good guys. You know, they've traveled to a couple of conventions recently. Hopefully, they'll be up at War Machine Weekend, so you might be able to meet them. Then we've got some really good players here too that haven't had a whole lot of the national success. You know, several of the top players might recognize a couple of games against them, but by and large they're not very known. Like Stephen Mitchell is a really good player he's the one who won Hardcore down at Crucible. Plays Scorn and Signar. Then, you know, Matt Blaisdell is pretty well known on the forums as Master Shake. He's, you know, one of the big rec guys. There's plenty of other people around. It's tough to just, you know, name names off the top of your head.
I'm with you.
Because, you know, you don't want to leave people out.
Yeah, I understand.
But you're going to leave people out.
It always happens. Always happens. So, is there anything else you want to talk to us about? Anything you want to get off your brain?
I mean, nothing really. I mean, I think we've covered a lot. But if you guys, certainly if you have any other questions, very little is off limits here.
I'm out of questions.
You're out of questions there, Andy?
Yeah.
You got any questions for
me? I didn't really have any to start with, so.
Okay.
Every now and then I chime in.
Any questions you have for us?
So, you guys coming down to GigaCon?
Yep.
You guys going to any other conventions? War Machine Weekend?
I'm trying to qualify for War Machine Weekend right now. So I have GigaCon, and then we have a convention in Northern Virginia called Nova, which it's a moderate-sized con. We get 30 to 40 people, but it's run excellently, and I would encourage anybody who's listening to come to Nova this year. And it's also a War Machine Weekend qualifier. But it lines up Dragon Con, and I think it lines up... Oh, man, I'm already forgetting. What's the big Western Gaming Con? Sorry. Anyway, I think it lines up with the other big cons, and so they don't always get the attendance they could. The Nova Open and GigaCon are my two plans for this year.
I'm planning on hitting both of those. In terms of War Machine Weekend, I'm trying really hard to get to War Machine Weekend. I realize they posted their dates recently. I believe it's, what, 7th? It's the 8th weekend of the... Has it 8th in it?
Yeah.
I think it's the first weekend in November.
I actually think that's also the same weekend as Mace. For some reason...
Mace is a weekend afterwards now. So
it's a weekend afterwards.
They don't line up anymore.
Oh, thank goodness. I thought they lined up on the same weekend.
They did last year.
I was so afraid of that.
Mace is our local, so we hold a bunch of...
We hold our thing here. All our gun bunnies show up at Mace. And last year, they were on the same freaking weekend.
Yeah, that's rough.
That's the one that Corey came up to and played in. I think he took second in our invitational. So.
Cool.
Yeah.
Tentatively right now, trying to figure out a way to get out to War Machine Weekend, lining up my days, everything like that.
No, that would be awesome.
I'd have to look at my big planner to see all my conventions I'm planning. Because I know I'm planning on going to Savannah. I'm planning on going to NomeCon.
Oh, okay. That's coming up soon, isn't it?
That's coming up soon.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about going there, too. Yeah, I'm planning on trying to hit a few conventions. And I actually plan on playing games, too, when I get there now.
Oh, my goodness. Not just Who's the Boss?
not just Who's the Boss, like this last weekend. I learned a little bit better of what to expect podcasting on the road and then establish contacts, hang out with people, play games. Podcast later is probably the best way to do it.
Well, it was very useful having you running around telling us what was going on.
It's true. I'm going to be in contact with M is going to be doing a lot of the stuff that I was doing
last
time when I go to conventions with her. So she's going to be doing a lot of that stuff. Yeah, so we're planning on hitting those conventions. We're looking forward to seeing you.
Yeah, definitely. Looking forward to it.
So I want to thank you for coming on the Gun Bunnies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not a problem. Glad to be here.
All right. Yeah, we got to represent the South.
Exactly. We have a viable meta. It's not just the Midwest.
It's not.
Guys, I don't know what they put in the water over there.
They have nothing to do.
Yeah, I know.
But play games. That's what it is. Like it's the RPG like section, and it's miniature gaming and all that stuff. It happens in the Midwest because what else are you gonna do out there?
Mm-hmm. That's fair, I guess. Been to Houston before, man. That place is nightmare of heat.
Oh, God, yeah, no. Stay away.
They just, they just hang out at Asgard Games and play all day. Makes sense.
I haven't
got so good over there.
Atlanta's definitely where I would go for non-humid, nice weather.
Except this past winter has been awful. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
An inch of snow and the city shuts down for a few days. It's happened a couple of times this year already.
We're in the same boat.
Yeah, we share your
No, North Carolina is no better at snow than Atlanta is.
We have, like, 2 snow plows for the entire city. It's not enough. It turns out.
Not enough. Not at all. And then up north, they're like, it's just a little bit of snow.
They don't understand.
They don't understand.
Yeah, when I went up to TempleCon, there was, like, 6 inches of snow on the ground. Like, I don't understand how this city is alive.
It's... No, I'm a former New Yorker, so coming down to North Carolina was a culture shock for that. School shuts down when there's a threat of snow where we're getting dismissed. Mm-hmm.
That happens. Because Asgard Games out there, it's really, really hot, and they just play all day. Just play all day in the air conditioning. That's just the way it has to work, because they can't be out in that heat.
Isn't that how Pagani gets good, is he plays hundreds and hundreds of games?
I don't think that man sleeps. Like for
his that guy certainly plays a lot of games. And it shows. I mean, mm-hmm. Practice does make perfect.
Yeah, for people wanting to get really good at this game, play a lot of games, play with a lot of different people, and put yourself out there.
Open a game store.
Open a game store.
That's what he did.
All right. Well, I want to thank you, Brian.
All right, yeah, no problem.
So this is the NC Gun Bunny signing off. This has been Will.
Andy.
Hey, I'm Brian.
Awesome. All right. Thank you.